PFT Media.
It's October, ladies and gentlemen.
Just if you thought you weren't gonna get loud,
right?
Just a loud intro, right.
Get
no
you up
Pedro.
There,
man.
No, I had to, fill in Jack for the big dog. All right, here we go. Big dog's out, but we're still in session.
We love you, Pedro.
The details. Once again, here we are, episode 33.
Yeah.
Look at that, everybody.
Oh, that's unlucky. It's 2-3.
It's our
unlucky number.
It's our.
It is?
Yeah.
Three is not an unlucky number.
Three is a lucky number.
13.
Yeah.
Oh, well, 3 is my unlucky number.
What is?
So 2-3s is bad.
No, but two lefts make a right, so you're good to go.
Right. 33. It is our Messiah episode. Or our Alexander the Great episode, however you use your 33s in history, our Stabbing of Caesar episode, all in there. And I am, of course, Dan Perella, your host, along with my co-host, Clara Sinclair, super producer, Chris Crespo,
hey.
And our very special guest in-house, Jack Gallagher.
Nice. Hello.
So, boo.
English person anymore.
You guys were arguing about, what were we trying to pronounce? Road? What was going on?
Road and
yeah,
roads.
See, do you notice how they couldn't tell what we were trying to pronounce? Do you?
Oh my god.
Well, I was only half listening.
Road and road.
But I found that fascinating.
You can use like context, can't you?
It was the word road and the word robe. Rebecca was saying, have you contacted the woman about the robe? But she was saying, have you contacted the woman about robe? And I was like...
Still
robe.
Said robe, didn't
and
he?
I was like,
what did
I
say?
And I was like, why would I contact someone about a road?
About the road.
Why
road.
Wouldn't you? Like,
about the road.
Maybe.
As in the book, The Road.
What's
as
the geographical,
down the road, okay.
geographical difference here?
Oh, between us?
Yes.
Think
other end of the country.
Think Game yes. of Thrones and think Starks and
Lannisters.
Lannisters. I would be a Lannister and he would be a Stark in the accent.
I'm all the way up at the top of the of England, not right. the top of the not the top of the kingdom.
No.
The Scots of that,
not Scotland.
So super northerner.
I'm super right. northerner.
Yeah.
Even though you guys started awesome. In the same city, you said,
Mm-mm.
right? Your families?
Well, yeah, we lived together.
So like, when we were in yeah, England. All
I moved to Manchester.
Okay. All the way back, our Irish families come from the same.
Oh,
place.
Yeah. Irish families come from the same place.
It's amazing how much an effect a region will have on you.
It's amazing, isn't it? Well, I'm thinking, what's the American analog? So if you're northerners, that's like northeast.
No, so yeah. actually the way it is, it's kind of
versus the
no,
it's kind
reversed.
Of split.
Really?
So yeah, it's reversed. As I say, not split, it's reversed. So the southern people in England are considered more upper class and sort of liberal and forward thinking.
Oh wow, I was just
yeah,
thinking
yes,
purely
we are.
Geographically.
Yes, we are.
But
well,
no, it's our more,
it is
more
geographical.
We're
because
just
the southern,
considered better.
And the northerners are the farmers and countrymen who are all
you
like,
are
from
not
the mills.
Farmers. We got proper farmers down
you're
south.
Not proper farmers. You all.
Hey, there's rivals. Proper farmers
out
in
of
New
the
York.
The two of
State.
Us who grew up on
yes,
a farm.
And New England.
I'm gonna admit to that.
Right? That was actually one of the major industries of New York originally was. Lumber.
Yeah, there it's you go. Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, it makes sense geographically in England because in the south it's closer to the European continent, so therefore more trade and commerce.
Okay.
Whereas
well, sure.
you go up north, not so much.
Yes,
so,
yes.
Jared Diamond has a great book called Guns, Germs, and Steel, and he talks about how geography makes or breaks civilizations. Where you are born really decides how well your civilization
mm-hmm.
is going to do. It has nothing to do with its people. Usually scientifically and geographically because you have intelligent people in every sector of the world.
I
yeah,
beg
sure.
to differ.
Just, you know, and but yeah, it's a big, it's a great thing.
Yeah.
So yeah,
what was the name of the book?
Guns, Germs, and Steel.
Guns,
and it's basically
and
it's people are successful based on the latitudes that they were born on and mm-hmm. not any type of inner strength of that people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's,
interesting.
It's a great piece of information.
Fascinating.
So yeah, speaking of the North, I was in New York.
Yes, for work.
Yes, I was at New York Comic Con.
Gotta go.
You know, New York is an intimidating place if you're not used to it.
It can be, yeah.
You know, sure. It's been 25 years since I've been in the city.
Oh, that's a long time between visits. Mm-hmm. It's fast paced.
So and if you only have a couple of days plus business to really take in, it's really overwhelming. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, you need like one thing to do per day.
You
like,
need to otherwise... at least see the. You need a week to just see the city first before you even start functioning in it. Really, I think
There's a lot going on in a small amount of square miles.
Mm-hmm. It does strike me as well. If there's a 25-year gap between seeing New York, it's like watching half of Taxi Driver and then coming back and watching Muppets Take Manhattan.
Yeah,
right.
Say, what happened? When did this get so clean? Like,
it's very true.
Basically, was yeah, I was out there with my parents and my dad, who had been born in Brooklyn, was very. Stick with me, kind of, because he remembered that
yes.
yeah.
that world, and you know we were. I was early '90s, so it was just getting cleaned up again. You know, for
that was the three strike thing, wasn't it? In New York,
that was you know, and was before Giuliani came in and
really it was around the same time, and they did the what was it called, the broken windows policy, which is. Having the police enforce a lot of small petty crimes like the graffiti and stuff to try to clean everything up. Mm-hmm. Freakonomics, great book. There's a chapter in there.
Freakonomics.
Great chapter in the very first one about how the whole drop in crime in New York and cleaning of all that up actually coincided with the passing of Roe v. Wade in the 70s.
Legalized abortion.
And yes, a lot of people that would have grown up in poor situations that would have led to probably criminalized behavior just never were born. So, yay, abortion.
I really hope the new Supreme Court Justice listens to this.
He's our first.
He's actually a listener. Yeah.
He emails us every week. Says thank you so much for your
info. He suggested one for next week. Yeah, so we're gonna be rocking there.
Yeah,
but yeah, it was weird seeing how clean it was compared to what I was. And I was in Times Square. And it's amazing how you don't need streetlights in Times Square, because I'm just like, whoa, this is like so LED bright. Heaven. Like,
and it never turns off.
Never turns off. The same lady in the Mickey Mouse costume is there 24/7. Like it's so it was crazy out there.
And then imagine how when Tom Cruise had and Cameron Crowe made Vanilla Sky in the early 2000s, mm-hmm. they shot a scene in Times Square. Where they had it shut down, and it was completely empty. It was for a dream sequence, and he's running through an empty Times Square. Imagine.
How do you do that?
Exactly. The logistics of shutting down money. Times Square in the middle of the day.
Money.
So much money.
Tons of it. Tons of it. So. What did you do up there? Did you just work? Or
No. I also went to go see the opening preview night of King Kong the Musical.
What?
Yes.
How'd you score those tickets?
The boss man loves his monkeys. Yeah. The boss man loves his big monkeys, and he had tickets ready to go, and so I took in a Broadway show.
That's awesome.
Yes. Oh, amazing. Was it like, was it good?
Technically, it was one of the best effects I've ever seen in a theater. That puppet is amazing.
That's like the only thing I'm interested
20
in.
20-foot tall, giant gorilla puppet. Mm-hmm. It's like half animatronic with the face, mm-hmm. and then the other half, very Japanese Bonroku with people moving the arms and everything like that. Six guys working the thing as it's like...
Like all dressed in black leotard. Yeah.
So it was beautiful. The boat that they did, it had like part of the stage lift up to show the hall when they were going, and they had the screen that was showing the Kong running, and the screen was moving in slow motion. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So effect wise, it boggled my mind that theater had advanced so far.
Yeah.
You know, it was
amazing.
When was
the last time you'd gone to a theater show?
Last time I'd gone to it, I think it was a local Broward theater in South Florida to see Phantom of the Opera, maybe about five.
Was that your first Broadway show?
My first Broadway show.
Okay.
Yes.
Amateur production of
No, it was a professional. It was
I was gonna say that might be a bit painful.
Hey, people got paid, all right?
it was off Broadway. It was touring.
It was very off Broadway.
In order to commission that, you have to like abide by loads of stupid rules that that Andrew Lloyd Webber put in, and one of them is there has to be a specific amount of candles on the stage during the Phantom of the Opera sequence when she's in the boat, and the main song, you have to have a certain amount of candles.
But what if I want to do it over here and put it on the Maitland Civic Center?
You're going to have to buy some candles.
Oh, man, I'm going to burn the place down. The place is made out of wood. It's not going to be good.
I have a question. So have you guys seen the original King Kong?
Yes.
Black and white.
1933.
One of my favorite movies, actually.
So a question I've always wondered about the original, right, is the last sequence is, you know, they have some showgirls. They open the curtains,
right,
and there's Kong, and an entire theater of people stands up and claps because they've seen. And obviously, escapes and, you know, climbs up the building. If Kong hadn't have escaped, What was the rest of that show going to be?
They
just sat for an hour.
Did you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, because, okay, some showgirls, we've warmed them up. We've opened the curtain. Wow, giant monkey. And was the expectation that they were going to stand there for an hour?
Maybe, and then take questions.
Like,
I think...
That's actually a question they answer in the play.
Do they?
They do.
Really?
They do a rehearsal. It's a whole play around how Kong was discovered is what they're rehearsing. And then they show Kong at the end. That was their plan in the Broadway. They actually answer that question.
Okay. So, but in the movie version, they blew it. They went straight to Kong. Right. And maybe they were going to tell the story afterwards.
And you don't need to see the story. You've seen it. Yeah. Okay, this makes perfect sense.
It's like, shut up, man. I see the monkey right there.
This is like the Rogue One of King Kong stories.
Hysterical.
Why was there an exhaust port there to begin with?
Right, exactly.
It's like that line in Jurassic World where they go, who's impressed by a dinosaur anymore?
You're
like, you had a monkey on a stage for an hour and a half, mm-hmm. maybe you get a little bit bored. It's impressive, don't get used to these things, but you know, gotta go get the train.
That's a heck of a first Broadway play.
It was technologically great.
Yeah, that's wild.
Script wise,
really, it's just
not
King Kong.
So much. They changed a lot.
They added a lot of stuff. Yeah.
A little SJW added into the script there.
In what way?
Oh, well, she can't be a damsel. She has to be sassy and the lead and kind of. The sass that they add to Anne. Because they don't want her ever in peril. Mm-hmm. The entire thing, she's never in peril. She's even cracking jokes and sassing the monkey because they never want to show her being weak. And by doing that, she destroys every moment of tension in the theater.
That's the point of like showing the monkey's not like a threat to her because she's been in so much peril throughout the rest of it. She gets to the monkey, she's pooping
herself. Strong-willed the entire time. And even at the end, she makes this line about, but thanks to you, I now know to stand up for myself. I'm like, no, you've been doing that
the
since Act 1.
Yeah. That's the point of
you've had no character progression.
Yeah, there's to be a character arc.
Right.
Not a character line. No. Yeah. Oh, that's a bummer.
They didn't want a damsel in distress, so they did that.
Speaking of damsels in distress.
And speaking of cities on the up and up, yes.
Yes.
Let's get to the heart of the topic today.
Mm. Which is going to be...
Clara's got this one.
Jack the Ripper. That was my best accent ever.
It was a good one.
Mm-hmm.
It's better than the whole road.
That's
road
your that's your London street urchin accent.
Oh yeah, cockles and pearls.
by way of Australia.
That's me all the time. Every UK accent I do is tinged with a bit of going.
I am secretly hoping that in the reboot of Mary Poppins that is yet to come out at the time of this recording, there is a Dick Van Dyke like person who can't really do an English accent, but we just let him by because of the charm.
Oh, you mean Dick Van Dyke? Because he's going to be in the movie.
Yeah. Oh, is he going
to be
in the movie? I did not know he was in it.
Still doing that accent.
You're getting him, buddy. You're getting that Cockney accent's coming back.
You've got you have my money.
I'm so happy that they're remaking that movie for everyone to see again.
It's a sequel. It's not a remake. Yeah, it's a sequel.
Man. Oh, that's even better.
Yeah, I think so too. It's smart.
I would like to add, I would love to see an Australian Jack the Ripper now. Yeah. Just because I would love Jack. That's not a knife. This is a knife.
There we go.
Oh, crikey. Who knows? Jack the Ripper could very well have been Australian.
That's true.
He wasn't, though, was he?
He could have been. I mean,
based on every theory we've looked up in research with this, he may have been a mouse, for all I can tell.
There's like a good like 100 to 150 suspects.
Right. Still?
We won't hit on all of them.
Still,
but...
yeah.
Wow.
Oh my goodness, it's crazy.
So where we are, let's paint this, of course. Yeah. We are in London in the 1880s, right. Okay? London at this time is the pinnacle of civilization.
You can't get any better.
Like, England's on top. Like, largest navy, largest army, largest economy.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone is struggling to keep up with them. The only thing, and it is the largest city in the world, at this point, you're looking at 6 million people living in London in 1888.
We got 3 million people living in Orlando now.
Right, and 8 million people living in New York City now. So imagine...
It's wild.
6 million people in London at this time, where half of them don't have plumbing, no electricity.
Yeah, that must have stunk.
That's what you're looking. This is where we are right now.
But you're used to it, though. It's like, yeah, this is just us. This is who we are.
Stinky.
Yeah.
And crime is rampant. It's the police force as we know it, modern police force is about maybe 60 years old with the Metropolitan Police Act created by Robert Peel. So they're still getting themselves together. Scotland Yard is at best a sequel to Super Troopers at this point. They really are just...
They tried really hard.
I know, but...
Are you talking about Super Troopers 2 or Scotland Yard?
I haven't seen the second one. I am so in love with the first one that I can't bring myself.
That might but be a
spoiler. Weren't they backstage at WWE?
Yeah, Super Troopers 2 was backstage at Raw SmackDown at one point.
See, that's just meet them there. That's better than seeing the movie. Shake their hand, like, hey, nice to meet you. Move on.
But it's interesting to note that even like with all of the crime going on in London at the time, murder, and especially female murder, was still very rare. Like, I think the year before there had been 6 recorded murders of women in London throughout the entire year. And we're going to hit on about like 5 or 6 murders happening within the couple of months that you've been.
So that's the other thing. So Mr. the Ripper... His there is what is known as the canonical 5. So these are the 5 people that are generally accepted as Jack the Ripper probably did it. But I believe he can be linked up to anywhere between I think it's like 11 or 12 murders because it being female murders. At a certain point, every woman that gets murdered in London at a certain way gets roped into being Jack the Ripper.
Right,
and even one or two of the canonical 5 that we'll get onto, you could even make arguments that Jack the Ripper probably didn't even do it. Like there is cases that the police at the time have said. It's probably 5 murders, but that also might be part of the myth that the newspapers are building. Because a lot of this that becomes of Jack the Ripper is almost down to what the newspapers make of this guy.
Huh.
Yeah,
interesting. And that's the other sort of social context of this is the lower classes, the working classes. They're not completely literate, but this is the time of the printing press and newspapers are being passed around now, and it's not just for the upper classes to hear about the news. This is the time of the penny dreadfuls, where people pay the penny to read a horror story.
Right.
Well, Jack the Ripper is now going to be the horror story.
Well, Victorians love horror stories. They love gruesome death. They're like weirdly obsessed with it, like the Victorian times.
Is it a possibility that then, I mean, spoiler alert, Jack the Ripper never even existed? Is it like, it's just a boogeyman like came up to explain the rampant violent misogyny in London at the time?
There is definitely a chance of that, but as we will get, as we'll sort of point out, there's a very specific way he liked to kill people that it's not just he cut women's throats and stabbed them. It was... So, should we just start with the first one?
Let's begin at the beginning.
Let's begin at the beginning.
That's a good idea.
On the 31st... I have notes because I'm awful with dates, but I wanted to get these right.
Awesome.
So on the 31st of August on 1888, so it's a very easy year to remember. It's all the eights.
So lucky.
A lady by the name of Mary Ann Nichols was found murdered in Bucks Row. Her throat was sliced and her abdomen was cut open.
Whoa.
So the abdomen was torn. I don't believe at this point anyone had removed... There wasn't any removal of organs. But it was noted to be a very vicious killing, which is why it struck people's imagination.
Still, even to this day, if something like that happened here, you'd be like, whoa, that sounds violent.
Yeah.
Over the top.
Definitely.
And obviously, at this point, it's considered a shocking thing, but it's not necessarily... considered a big, you know, it's not the biggest thing. This is not going to be the biggest serial killer because there's never been a serial killer in England at this point. So she's the beginning. Now, there are 2 people before this murder who occasionally get linked.
Yeah, I would argue that the first Jack the Ripper killing was Martha Tambra. And looking at, serial killers tend to start off with a killing that's not particularly what they want to do. So, it would just be, a real rampant, frantic one. And Martha Tambra, she's a prostitute, which completely fits with Jack the Ripper's. All the women that he kills are prostitutes.
Okay. Yeah, I should have mentioned Mary Ann Nichols is a prostitute. All these women are prostitutes between the age of 40 to 50.
apart from the last
one. Also, all last one's the youngest.
Yeah. Yeah, she's very significantly younger.
Interesting.
But yeah, so Martha Tambra, she's stabbed like 36 times.
Whoa.
And left on the street.
So it's not an accident. It's not like, oops.
No. Yeah. No,
I thought one time. I thought 36 times.
Someone didn't sneeze a lot.
Yes, no. Right. Oh, man.
So, but to me, I mean, you can interpret these so many different ways. Mm. I mean, researching this, me and him have had so many arguments at home. Being like, no, this proves my theory. No, this proves mine. But to me, she's my starting point. She's my starting point because it's a knife attack. It's the right age. It's the right profession. It's the
similar
right area.
Mm.
And that to me says he wanted to do it and he just was with the knife stabbing her and then was running away and be like, oh my god, I got away with the first one. Maybe with the next one I'll get a bit more
And the area of London that you guys mentioned, what type of area are we looking at here?
So Whitechapel is the bad area of London. This is the working class. This is where it's mostly crime ridden as well. It is a it's London streets as well. So to clarify, it's some complete opposite of New York City. Whereas New York is a grid pattern, it's quite easy to find your way around. London is twisting, turning roads that
it's
are all intersect.
Built on top of each other.
Built on top of each other constantly to the point. So this is a area where you need to know your way around if you are going to make an escape route, which leads most people to believe that Jack the Ripper is someone from this area. Because during the first killing, he was during either killing that you consider it might be the first one, he's never seen. There's never a case of seeing someone be stabbed and the guy making a runner.
Mm-hmm.
In one of the theories we'll get to later, there is one person who's been at the crime scene who people then tie into, but we'll get into that. But there's never a case of there goes Jack the Ripper and he starts running and dindalin, right. Start chasing him.
He is seen, but a man is seen by a couple of people, but not seen doing it, but seen in the area the time.
Right.
So you do get a very vague description of him at
sinister
some
and cloak.
So that's the 31st of August.
Mm.
So horrible murder. And then on the 8th of September, same year, Annie Chapman is murdered. Another prostitute, prone to drinking, early mid-40s. And now she's had her throat cut, her abdomen is cleaved as well, but this time her uterus is removed.
Oof, very specific.
These are very specific cuts as well. People believe that the Ripper had anatomical knowledge,
mm-hmm.
in that he might have, it's ranged from he might have been a fishmonger,
mm-hmm.
so he might have known how to gut fish,
mm-hmm.
to he might have been a doctor of a royal household, but we'll get to that one later.
I guess you would think if he's removing specific organs, he's not reaching in there and getting lucky, right? He kind of knows what he's doing there.
I mean, a uterus isn't a small organ in your body. It's a pretty big one. Mm-hmm. I do argue against the anatomical knowledge, because if your knife is sharp enough to open somebody up, you can grab an organ and slice it and people are it's a really clean slice. I don't know how much I buy into
the way it is always described though is it is a skilled removal of organs.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound like he was hacking away. It sounded as if he knew how to, what he wanted to remove from these people, he removed quite quickly.
Interesting. They're at least an amateur vivisectionist.
When the police were trying to profile at this point in the investigation, when there were two bodies, they characterized him as a doctor or a surgeon because of the removal of the uterus, mm-hmm. which is where it kind of stems from.
Okay.
I mean, they eventually in the later times kind of say maybe he's not a doctor, he could be XYZ, what Jack said.
Many different things. So this is the beginning of the myth that is to become this murderer. And at this time, it's called
I got one of those.
So these are the beginnings of what would be known at the time as the Whitechapel murders. Mm-hmm. And the newspapers have taken to calling this person Leather Apron, because they're imagining a butcher.
Sure.
So they're imagining
Leatherface.
Right.
Basically, a butcher sneaking around, killing people.
Mm-hmm.
And a baker and a candlestick maker.
Those are his chaps. That was John the candlestick maker, George the baker.
And Jeffrey the baker.
So there's a little bit of a lull in this in terms of a few weeks go by.
Mm-hmm.
And then a letter arrives at one of the newspapers, which is the Central News Agency.
Okay.
This letter arrives on the 27th of September, so towards the end of the month, and it is now known as the Dear Boss letter. Now, the dear, it opens with Dear Boss, and it goes on to claim that this the person writing this is the murderer, the leather apron murderer. It's written all in red ink. He says at the time, I would have written this in the girl's blood, but I've kept it in a bottle and it's become too much like glue. So I hope red ink will do for you.
Interesting.
Wow.
What does that remind you of? American equivalent, San Francisco, 1960s, 70s.
Right, you're looking at, Sam, of course.
No, I'm thinking Zodiac, that's New York. Zodiac.
Sam also is New York. Caught, right?
Also never caught, theorized who it may be, and wrote
maybe
letters.
Maybe he was Jack the Ripper as well. The same person.
Time traveler.
Oh, yeah.
I do have a Jack the Ripper time traveler script that does tie in Zodiac. Oh, you know what? I shouldn't have said that on the show. People are going to steal it. Ah, you tricked me.
Patent pending.
Yeah. I'll cut that out and email it to myself and we'll be good to go.
So in the Dear Boss letter, he claims that he will sever the ear of his next victim.
Okay.
As proof that this is who he is. And he goes, I understand the police are saying I'm a doctor and that they're close to catching me. And basically is mocking them, saying that they're nowhere close to catching me. Mm. Which he was right. This is how police investigation worked at the time was, excuse me, did you see him murder this person?
Oh, you see a murder over here? No.
And the person goes, no, and they go, drat.
Oh, drat.
Just missed it.
All back to the pub.
Did you ask, what's all this then? Yes, yeah. I did. And then,
what about,
they didn't see nothing.
Did you check what the bother was?
Check your tiny pad.
So you're saying it's not like CSI. They're not checking for DNA.
They are not checking for DNA.
They don't have DNA.
No, they don't have fingerprints. Yeah. They don't have anything.
It's a keystone operation.
It really is. It's amazing anyone got caught.
They're trying so hard.
They have a guessing game and they've only got chalk to draw in.
Again, you have to understand, 100 years ago, law enforcement's only job was to ring a bell and say 3 o'clock and all's well.
Yeah.
This is what they, you know,
had whistles.
They had whistles.
If something went wrong, they whistled.
And they walked around with sticks in the middle of the night sometimes. Oh, yeah. I saw Sean Connery do it in a movie once.
So the Dear Boss letter, he claims he's going to get back to work again soon. Mm-hmm. He will remove the ear of the next victim as proof that this is who he is. Right. But he says, I believe it's truly yours or dear yours, Jack the Ripper. He says, don't mind me giving you the trade name.
Interesting.
This is the first Jack the Ripper.
He names himself.
The Zodiac. Yeah. Oh, wow. So that's where Zodiac got her from. See, you're not supposed to give yourself branding. A nickname, though.
You don't give yourself a nickname.
But it is branding. Yeah, he branded himself.
He knows his brand. Different. Now.
Smart.
This will happen a lot. This letter might have been fake.
Oh.
A lot of signs point to this letter being fake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I believe even at one of the reporters later claimed that someone had written it deliberately as a way of making the news still relevant at the time because nothing else had happened since the last murder. Right. So they wanted to keep the fear going so that people would keep buying the newspapers.
Sounds familiar.
Yes. Right. So this happens. The Dear Boss letter happens and a couple days go by. And on the 30th of September, we now have what's called the double event.
Ooh.
Dun, dun, dun.
Wait, I got that.
So, if the name didn't give it away, the double event was...
three people died. No.
They weren't gonna count.
Double used to be different things back in the 80s.
They weren't so good at math back then.
Right. Yeah.
So this is the third and the fourth canonical killing of Jack the Ripper, who is now obviously Leather Apron, now known as Jack the Ripper.
Mm-hmm.
The artist formerly known as Leather Apron. So Elizabeth Stride is victim number 3, and Catherine Eddowes is victim number 4.
Japanese.
So the thing that makes this one interesting is that Stride is killed with a very clear incision to her neck. It cuts one of the main arteries in the left side of her neck, but no ripping happens.
Mm.
The opening of the abdomen, removing of internal organs does not happen. All right. People theorize that the Ripper noticed someone coming up on him because this killing happens somewhere quite public, I believe, doesn't it?
So this happens. There are... So Was it Stride? Is it Stride?
Stride.
She's on this street, which is really busy. It's outside this really busy bar. And she's seen multiple times during that night, and like about 10 minutes before her body is discovered, she's seen with two men by a Jewish immigrant. And because London at the time is very, what's the word?
Multicultural, it's very immigrant heavy.
No, it's just very anti-Jewish.
Oh, it's anti-Semitic.
Anti-Semitic.
Yeah. A lot of them are coming in from Russia at this time.
Interesting. Okay.
So this Jewish guy, he sees the two people and like they shout a jeer at him and he runs away.
Mm-hmm.
And literally like 10 minutes after he's seen her with two men, she's found dead.
So might not have been a Ripper killing, but is generally attributed to Jack the Ripper.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Because the throat's cut, it's like that.
In such a specific way.
Yeah. Because of the severing of the artery. Yeah.
She's also strangled like the other all of the Ripper victims before they're stabbed, they're strangled to death.
Hmm.
Like they're not actually killed by incisions.
Okay.
They're all strangled first.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Very redundant.
Which usually actually means that if you were to strangle someone to death and then slice their throat, there isn't going to be the usual arterial spray you would if you straight cut the neck.
Sure.
Which means if you are Jack the Ripper, you're probably not walking around with a lot of blood on you.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be a thought of his. Mm. Or some people have theorized that he was... the murder wasn't the point. The point was to get a body to mutilate because that was what he was after. He was after mutilation. That was his thing.
And it's easier to mutilate a body if they're just laying there dead.
If they're just dead already,
fresh dead.
Like, I don't buy her being a Ripper victim, honestly. Because it's just totally, like, it's not his MO at all. Like, she's not killed in a similar way enough for me, like, where...
but still considered part of the five. She's still
a prostitute.
Because of the prostitute and a little bit of what will come the next day.
Oh. The part of the double event,
second part of the double event. So the second part of the double event is Catherine Eddowes, whose body is discovered 45 minutes later west. It's about a 15-minute walk west.
Okay.
So if you are to accept that Jack killed Elizabeth Stride, he went west for 15 minutes, found another prostitute, murdered, and this prostitute was disemboweled.
Maybe because he got interrupted the first time. Yeah. He's like, I didn't get my thing.
Which is the theory.
That's the argument.
That's persuasive.
So her throat is sliced.
You're not buying it then.
I'm not buying it.
Her abdomen's ripped open. Her left kidney is removed.
Whoa.
And a major part of her uterus is removed as well.
Yeah.
So he's upping the ante. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
then he's gotta be getting some blood on him here, right? Because of
these deals. And the other significant part of this, which leads a lot of people to believe that Jack the Ripper is a person from Whitechapel or living in Whitechapel, very familiar with it, is that if you go east again, so he's gone. Say if Elizabeth Stride is there, he moves west. Kills Eddowes, he moves east again, so he zigzags back.
Okay.
A piece of Eddowes' apron is found in a building not too far away, like a severed piece of that apron, and it's found near some graffiti.
Mm-hmm.
And this graffiti points to potentially Jack the Ripper being a Jewish man, because the graffiti is a little bit poorly written, but it essentially says the Jews are not men who will be blamed for nothing.
Whoa. So this isn't photographed either. So this is like the only piece of evidence that there isn't like a photograph of, because it was the graffiti was done in like a marketplace, and all the market was done to set up, and it was really like offensive to Jewish people, and London at the time obviously was like, yeah, maybe we shouldn't be encouraging this. So they washed it off before they they'd have to, pictures at the time took like half an hour like to do.
Yeah, all the exposure. Yeah. Yeah, it takes forever to take a picture.
So this happens, and they're saying like, why is Elizabeth Stride tied to Jack the Ripper? You know, there's good evidence to point to the fact she was probably killed by two other men.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
It's because the next morning, the central news agency receives another letter. This letter is it's a postcard this time, also written in red ink. And this is called the Saucy Jack postcard. Good old Saucy Jack. And this is the one which actually talks about the very specific goings on of last night.
Okay.
Before it's been reported.
Ooh.
So the postcard is...
Inside information.
Mm-hmm. The postcard is mentioning about the double event before it's happened, and he says, sorry I didn't get the ear for you. I was interrupted before I could finish the job.
Whoa.
Basically.
Interesting.
And he's further taunting the police, saying, he won't be caught at this time. And it has similar sort of wording that the Dear Boss letter had,
right,
as well. So people have questioned the validity of it because of the Dear Boss's validity. But there is also the question of, he has the information before it's been reported. Right. He knows the murders have happened. He's also implied, you know, what he's done, way before the reports have got to it. The argument is obviously that potentially, if you're around the Whitechapel area, you might have known. Yeah. If you're a reporter, you might already have that information to falsify this. I would
definitely argue that there would, like, you know, reporters always have a police officer they speak to or something that could let them know that information. But let's just have fun and say it's Jack the Ripper.
But then Saucy Jack is the postcard that's then posted up the next day, saying, we got this the night of the murder. He had time to write this to us.
Mm-hmm.
So that is murders 3 and 4, and now there's a little bit of a lull, and it takes until the 9th of November for the last and canonical killing.
Okay.
So there's 11 killings.
So it's like a month and a half later?
Yeah.
It's like a couple really fast and a little bit of a break. Oh,
okay. So there's a little bit of a break. Now, this is the one that's very different. In that, is she
pretty
20s?
Messed up?
She's 20s.
She's about 25. Mm. She's youngest by about 20 years.
Still a prostitute. Right. Now, the difference between this murder and the others is a location. Apart from, like, also what happened, the location. So all of the other prostitutes are killed out in the street.
Right.
He's killed them out in the open, which is one thing, which also implies he probably knew the police routes.
Mm.
And he's managed to escape both times without getting spotted. So definitely knowing the routes. If you also believe that he zigzagged during the double event, he's gone through highly populated areas after killing two women and not gotten noticed. The description that people have pieced together over time of little witnesses, and don't stare too hard at me when I say this one, he's between 5'5" and 5'7". He's a pale gentleman with a curly mustache and a pale complexion.
Yeah,
it fits me a little too. Thankfully, I'm from the north.
The Sentinel ain't gonna move.
Yeah. Also named Jack. So
I'm not worried at all.
So on the 9th of November, this doesn't happen out in the street. This happens in her home. This doesn't show any signs of breaking and entering. This is Mary Kelly.
Okay.
So she dies in her sleep. The police describe it as she has folded up her clothes in the usual way one would when they would go to bed.
All right.
And there's no sign of forced entry.
The police described it. The
police described it.
Okay.
Had a real poet laureate on this.
It's a very interesting way they had to write back then.
Yeah, to like describe the setting there.
It's very fanciful.
Yeah, exactly.
And she was discovered the next morning by her landlord. And he said, the work in there looks more like the devil than the man. Because this is the most vicious killing.
It's horrendous.
She has a throat severed down to the spine.
Oh.
So he's the deepest cut of all of them. Mm-hmm. Her abdomen is completely emptied of its organs. Mm-hmm. Her heart's gone missing. Her body's eviscerated. Her face is hacked away. He chops away at her breasts and moves them up the pillow. And then he hacks away so much at her legs that basically bone is just showing.
Oh.
There are pictures of this. Ooh. Like, there are actual pictures of the body. If you can stomach it, I would say look at it. Because you can't even imagine how horrendous this
actual pictures,
looks.
Oh my goodness. Why? It's so intense. Why is this one dead?
He had the time.
But why is it added to... Why is it considered part of the killings?
It's part of the killings because it's so vicious.
Yeah.
Because it is a prostitute. Yeah. It's off a similar area.
Mm-hmm.
But the level of viciousness is just attributed to the Ripper. Because no one else was disemboweling victims.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of his defining character.
Yeah, that's his MO. Okay.
That's the ripping. So that is considered the last canonical killing of Jack the Ripper.
Okay.
That's considered the end of it. But it's the worst one by far. That is the little autumn of terror there in London, England.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the canonical five. And then there's 8 to 12 other people that you can link to it. But generally those people are the ones that the police are stumped over, and the police generally attribute to him.
Are all the rest of them prostitutes, or some of them not prostitutes?
But I'm not too sure. I know I think the eight we looked at,
everyone was a prostitute.
But it was it. So in that area, it wasn't a particularly uncommon thing for women to do.
Sure, it's just like, that part of town was
You know, Whitechapel wasn't like dirt poor. It wasn't like poverty, but it was like working men, and you know,
right. If you didn't want to work in the factory, there was this other option.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right.
Sure.
Now the last thing that kind of happens in the timeline here before we can talk about everyone that's ever been implicated in this, because
was Lewis Carroll.
It was probably Lewis Carroll. So. It's you know, really the thing about Jack the Ripper is it's the whodunit aspect, right? Because so many people have been implicated over time. The last, very last thing that happens is the From Hell letter.
Right, this is the whole movie and comic book out of this one.
This is the movie comic book, yes. It's not that the police have never received other letters than these. These are the kind of three famous ones, the Dear Boss, the Saucy Jack, and the From Hell. Now, From Hell is written in a very different way to the other two.
Okay.
Blue ink.
It's blue ink. It's more of a mole.
Kill the nobleman.
It's not delivered to the Central News Agency. This is received by George Lusk, who is the president of the Whitechapel Vigilance Committee. So basically that's all like neighborhood watch. It's a cardboard box, and inside there was, you know, written in was the letter, but inside the cardboard box was a kidney, part of a kidney, and as you'll remember, the fourth victim had her left kidney removed. It goes on to claim that this is Jack the Ripper. He never calls himself Jack the Ripper, but the implication that is Jack the Ripper, and the sign off is From Hell. He doesn't say, you know, truly yours or anything. He just says From Hell.
Yeah.
He claims within this letter that he's not done, and that the reason there is half a kidney in this is because he fried up the other half to eat, implying that he's actually a cannibal.
That makes a little bit of sense there. If you're going to be so into the innards and the sweetbreads, you know, at some point you're going to look at it and be like, oh, what does that taste like?
I wonder. Is that liver or kidney? Yeah. As we've always said, the validity of this has been questioned.
Right.
To the point where some people have pointed that this may have been a prank by a medical student.
Wasn't it definitely a prank by a medical student? They came up and admitted it.
But a lot of people kind of admit to a lot of random things throughout this time period.
For fame.
For fame, but just to keep it going. Which also kind of speaks to like the situation around the time. Like, there is a hysteria around Jack the Ripper, but we kind of having this discussion yesterday about, I contend Jack the Ripper's the first modern celebrity. Before this time, everyone who's famous in a society is like a war hero or a leader, something to that, you know, or a legend, very based on a legend or something like that.
Or someone who does blackface in our country.
Oh my god, I can't believe that's even.
We'll talk about it some other time.
That's a rabbit hole.
That's its own episode. Yeah.
We'll talk about Dan Rice a little bit later.
But Jack the Ripper is kind of, it's 1888, the printing press has become a thing, modern media is in its complete infancy.
Right.
And this is, for me, the first celebrity of the modern era. He's so infamous. He has a celebrity name as well. He's Jack the Ripper. He has a pseudonym that you associate with him.
Even as a nickname.
He's also like a great villain for any politics and politicians wanting to like be like, oh, we need to clean up the streets, I'm gonna catch Jack the Ripper. Like, he's a real villain.
A good boogeyman that you can point to.
And this is also around the time when like Sherlock Holmes is the fictional character of England. So there is an intense murder mystery sort of element to his character. It's the real life murder mystery.
And how far is 20 years after Edgar Allan Poe? He did a lot of murder mystery type stuff, Murders at a Rue Morgue and stuff like
Poe, figuring
out that a monkey did it the whole time. Spoiler alert.
Poe writes around the 1830s or so.
1830s, further back.
He's the early Gothic period.
So there was like a little bit of detective work by the police. Mm-hmm. Like, so the police at one point did actually dress up like women and went out on the streets of London to try and get attacked.
I really hope I don't get stabbed tonight. They're really unfortunate.
So they did try.
They tried the but it is there's no forensic evidence. There's no CSI.
No, they can't do anything.
There is. We hope we bump into him, or we hope someone else bumps into him and tells us who he is.
Most of the state of the art criminology is being written in the Holmes books itself. that's where we're at.
Yeah, they're reading Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. They're like, oh, that's a good idea.
They actually ask him to consult him several times, not just on Jack, but in other cases, because he's thinking outside the box.
You seem to know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And as well, like, because of the pranks, because of the people sending false letters in, because of the people falsely claiming to be Jack the Ripper who were nowhere near the murders when they happened, it's very hard for them to nail down subjects. But I believe the police commissioner at the time, eventually, or the equivalent, nailed down three prime suspects, but they can never attribute the murders to any of these three people.
So who do we got?
The one I wrote down, because to me this is the most interesting one, is Aaron Krominski, who is a Polish immigrant.
This is the one I've heard has some of the biggest glaring evidence too. Yeah.
So this is the one that is supposedly has been proven, I'm doing air quotes,
right,
proven in modern times to be Jack the Ripper.
Okay.
So I can't, for all my notes, again, I didn't take the notes down of the other two fellas, but basically the three main ones, basically everyone who's ever suspected is from around Whitechapel. One of the suspects was described as being having a sexual psychosis, or something like that. And another, you know, everyone has a history of mental health,
of course,
who has been investigated.
Sure.
So Aaron Krominski is someone who was later institutionalized and basically had come in and out for the rest of his life as well, been in mental homes. The thing that's happened in modern times is that the writer Russell Edwards, in his book, claims to have gotten a hold of a shawl from the third victim, I believe, third or fourth victim. And
from the double event?
From the double event. Oh.
From the double event.
From the infamous double event.
The most, yeah.
So
this shawl is never, like, on any official police records.
Never documented that she had it.
Okay.
But the evidence that he has claimed to find, and he used DNA analysis from the University of Liverpool.
Okay.
Is that...
That's your first mistake, Liverpool.
Everybody walking around in Beatles cuts.
It's been a hard day stabbing. So there's blood on this, and he attributes it to one of the victims.
Okay.
He nails down... we looked at one of the theories. There's supposed to be a specific mutagen in this family bloodline that you can trace, and it's like 214.1C.
Okay.
And that is found in it's less than 0.1% of people. So they were like, right, this has to be a member of her family because it's indicative to this bloodline, and it was sold as Herschel. And then they found mitochondrial DNA of Krominski's DNA on this, and they said, well, this is the only forensic evidence of Jack the Ripper. He was already a prime suspect, and a couple of years after the murder stopped, he was put into a mental institution, so, you know, he probably had never had the opportunity to continue going. So Edwards concludes, we definitely have Jack the Ripper. This is definitely Jack the Ripper.
But then
case closed. And then as the case was closing, someone, Columbo, went, by the way,
just one more thing.
It turns out that the mutagen that is in this family bloodline is not 214.1C. It's 215.1C. So we made a little mistake there.
What's the difference between
two? Yeah, that's right.
So the little difference.
99% of the population.
That is the difference. So you've gone from a mutagen that's in less than 0.1% of the population to something that is in 99% of European population. So there is no definitive evidence that it was part of the victim. Now, here's the other thing. the doctor who's done all of this DNA and forensic evidence hasn't submitted it to peer-reviewed studies.
Oh.
Yeah.
And has refused to comment on it as well.
I wonder why. He's like, that's good enough. Yeah. Read my book. It's all right there.
Basically.
The Polish guy is for sure the most famous one, but honestly, there is next to no evidence that he had anything to do with it.
People with a background in sort of genetics and forensics say, this isn't evidence because we haven't tested it independently, and you have a financial gain of testing this.
Right, exactly. We're claiming this.
There is literally no evidence here, so it's that piece of evidence has been debunked. It's not that Kraminsky was a fine chap or anything. Yeah,
but for some reason, that one's become popularized. as this is the answer.
We don't like Polish people in England.
Fair enough. Hey, surprise! A lot of people in America that like Polish people for a very long time.
We love our Eastern European neighbors.
So, let me put forward my.
I was going to say, this what are your favorites?
This
what
is the fun bit. This is the bit that's interesting.
Let me put forward my theory.
All right. Number two.
So I'm going to tell you that before I go on to who I think it was, there was also a theory that it might have been a Jill the Ripper. Instead of a man, it was a woman, because somebody theorized that it would be easier for a woman to pass through the streets unnoticed.
True.
Somebody like a midwife would have the knowledge to be able to do all of the organ stuff.
Also
have blood on her, and nobody would really bat an eyelid.
Oh, yeah.
So with this theory came a woman called Mary Pearsley, who...
Pearsley. See?
And she came under scrutiny after she was found guilty of the murder of her husband's mistress and her mistress's child.
Bum, bum, bum.
I got that. Oh, never mind. We already done that one.
It's a bit of a wild one. She's a bit of a wild card, but she is the only female to ever be linked.
Therefore, she went around killing everyone she thought was being infidelity with her husband.
Well, she gets linked to it because of the way she killed the mistress.
Right.
She sliced and diced and smashed and disemboweled this woman to the point of almost severing her head off.
Jeez.
She smothered the child and killed this 8-month old child as well. It was really bad.
It sounds like that fifth one, that crazy murder. Right.
Yeah. This is why she got linked to, because she was around the time.
She's so vicious,
there's nothing else to really link it. I mean, she wasn't particularly stealthy, she was, taking the baby's pram around the streets to dump the bodies and stuff. It really wasn't... the police found her out because they went into her living room and there was just blood everywhere and, on all of her clothes.
Really...
But
now's when we say, what's all this then?
Equal opportunity of the sexes. God,
this is when she
runs
back and goes, drat, I would have gotten away with it too.
If it wasn't for meddling cops walking into here and just playing the evidence on the walls.
And then the Benny Hill music plays and they run around the house for a little while.
Oh my goodness.
So my favorite theory, and the only one that I actually think has any weight to it, is a guy called Charles Lechmere.
Oh, Charles. There's always a mass murderer named Charles.
Chuck. It's an evil name, Chuck.
Mm-hmm. Manson.
So Charles Lechmere is the man who first discovered Marianne Nichols' body.
Mm-hmm.
So Marianne Nichols
was the first?
She's the first official Jack the Ripper victim.
Okay.
And he allegedly discovers her body on the way to work, is then joined by another man called Paul, and they go and find a police officer.
Okay.
Now, there are discrepancies, so... Him and Paul aren't walking together. It's a very long street where this body is, and he's ahead of Paul, but Paul doesn't see him until he's standing over the body. And he says he was only there for seconds before Paul, but he wasn't. There's time discrepancies of about 9 minutes between when he said he left home and when he found the body.
Sure.
So it's what was he doing during that time?
And so maybe this dude just rolled up on him while he was getting his slash on.
Maybe. So after they found the body, Paul actually tries to see if he's still alive. Because at the time, Paul doesn't say there's no blood, there's no obvious there's no obvious like bad things that have happened to this woman,
mm-hmm.
because this is the only body who, after she'd been stabbed, her clothes were pulled back down across all of the abdomen slashes mm-hmm. that she had.
Oh.
So Paul's trying to like see if she's okay, and Lechmere's like, no, no, don't touch her. I'm not touching her. I'm not helping you pick her up.
Mm.
And Paul decided, well, we'll go and find a policeman. And so him and Lechmere go and find a police officer. And when they find the police officer, Lechmere says, oh, we're passing on a message. A police officer's already found, like, we found a body. There's a police officer there. He asked for you to go and help him. There happened to be a police officer there who finds the body after the two of them have left.
Interesting.
But there
so he just got
like
lucky.
He got lucky.
Right, yeah.
But the police never questioned it because when he got there, there was a police officer.
Right.
He also gives a wrong name. His name is Charles Lechmere, but he says his name is Charles Cross, which was his name at one point in his life mm-hmm. when he was a boy, but it's not his name. It's not his name now. And he also gives a wrong address.
So I thought the address was correct.
No, the address, like the address is an address to their family, and he's like the estate because he's like the only man left in their family.
Okay.
Which is how they find out what his real name was.
Mm-hmm.
So he gave his old fake, old name that he doesn't use anymore.
Yeah, he gave
and an
fake
old address
name.
That he doesn't live at.
Yeah, oh, old okay. address. But it's not he like lies the... about the police officer. Mm-hmm. He lies about what time he gets to the body.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the most interesting thing is, Paul, there's no reason for Paul to lie. Paul's not under anything right
Paul's
now.
Just a dude.
Like, Paul's just there. He's on his
yeah.
way to
right.
work.
He's
and
on the
he
way
to
meet
him.
John Paul. You know, John Paul and Ringo.
Right.
They're
right.
all hanging out.
He's like, I got an idea for a song. He goes, bippity boppity boo.
And Paul says that he doesn't see any blood. There's no blood when Paul sees it.
Mm.
And when the police officer that finds it after the men go to find the other police officer, there is a massive pool of blood. Immediately, that's what he says. In his report, he says there was a massive pool of blood. So when Paul came and Lechmere found her,
right.
she must have literally like been killed within like at least 30 seconds, a minute.
Because it, the blood she, hadn't was, had time to start...
The blood hadn't had time to start pouring out.
Mm.
Maybe that's why the clothes were pulled back down.
So
it's like, oh, someone's coming. I can't continue with this. I gotta pull the clothes down.
Maybe.
To cover up the crime real quick.
Maybe.
Oh, man. Paul screwed it all up.
Yeah. So this is like, this is really why Lechmere is my favorite for this. Because he's the only, I mean, it goes, so Lechmere is a Whitechapel man. He's very familiar, and the one murder that's like south of Whitechapel happens
right.
within like two roads of where his mum lives and where he grew up as a child.
Interesting.
So that was kind of the other interesting thing is, if you also include, we're talking about one of the murders that's not canonical,
mm-hmm.
so the one that comes before this, if you were to take Lechmere's quickest route from him to his work,
right.
And one of the alternate paths you could take, because, you know, you can take two different paths to get there, all but two of the murders are along this path.
Oh.
And, as Rebecca said, the two other murders happen within walking distance of his mother's home.
Interesting.
Like...
I mean, come on, it seems so obvious,
right?
Well, it seems obvious, but you can make evidence for anywhere. But for me, he's the only person who is ever found alone with a Ripper victim body.
Right.
Very, very...
Acting suspicious.
Acting suspiciously, lying, and very, very close to the time that the woman had to have been killed for the blood to have poured out.
Right. How curly was his mustache, though?
Oh. I mean, there's only one photo of him,
right.
and it's when he was, like, 75,
mm.
and he did have a very big, bushy beard,
mm.
and he was dead in the eye.
He wasn't dead in the photo, just dead
right,
in the eye.
He is my favorite one.
He's
for
your favorite?
It. He is
okay.
my favorite one for
so,
it. There are more fun ones.
Yeah, that's like one of those circumstantial things. So like, we're up between like...
He was there though.
We're not trying to solve the case, but we're trying
I
to
I think
solve.
I've solved it, honestly.
So I have two of my favorites. These are my two favorite ones. But I will also throw in, as a complete aside, it's completely ridiculous, been disproven, but at some point, Lewis Carroll was mentioned by one of his friends to be Jack the Ripper.
Author of Alice in Wonderland, Through the Looking Glass, etc.,
yeah.
etc.
So they argued that if you, like, reordered the words in some of the books. It described the murders.
Oh, well, sure, I can reorder the words of any
book. That's the point.
Does your book use all 26 letters? Then guess what I can do?
Supposedly as well, at some point in one of his like diary entries, he made a reference to it or something like that, but very obscure. Yeah. You know, some obscure.
Man, I'm sure it was the news of the time.
His mind on proto-LSD before.
But speaking of diaries, this is the one I like, and not because I like it because I believe, oh, this guy definitely did it. I just think this is fantastic.
Okay.
So, this one goes against the idea that this is someone native to Whitechapel.
Okay.
There's a chap by the name of James Maybrick.
Maybrick,
who's a cotton mill owner up in Liverpool.
Liverpool
Northerner,
again.
Northerner, I wonder why he likes that one.
Northerner. So this is...
He wants to take credit for everything.
So this is the complete other
end
of the country.
Trying to take our serial killer.
This is the complete other end of the country, which would speak against, well, why is, you know, he's killing people at the other end of the country. Why would he be doing this? All of the murders happen on weekends.
On a Saturday or a Sunday.
So he's a...
Or a Friday.
He's a weekend warrior. Yeah!
But it implies that someone's... They're busy in the middle of the week.
Right.
And this is the thing they're
doing. Don't have time for mass murder.
Don't have time for
mass murder. Atlantic City on the weekend. On a Wednesday. I mean, who?
So,
yeah, I'm busy.
So Maybrick had the means to travel down south and murder these people in his spare time. But the reason he's tied in is not because someone plucked a name out of a hat and thought this wealthy gentleman had the time.
Right.
Maybrick's house, underneath one of the floorboards, a diary was found. The diary has been dated. They can't exactly say it was from 1888, but they can say it's definitely from around this time. So it's not been forged in that sense. But it claims to be James Maybrick's diary. And within that diary, he says he is Jack the Ripper. He says he's Jack the Ripper, and he claims that the reason he did this is because of his wife's infidelity. And out of pure rage, he goes down to London and
kills some prostitutes.
Murders women over the course of a few months.
Because there were no prostitutes in Liverpool at the time.
Yeah. It's a pretty clean city from what I hear.
But he
was maybe smart enough to not take a dump where he ate.
Also creates the idea of like that's a thing of he's not murdering around his local area.
Right.
So he's also not known to the residents, which means it's harder to identify him. Mm-hmm. Of course, this discounts the idea that if he was to make a quick getaway, which he would have to during the double event, he wouldn't be as familiar with Whitechapel, unless he frequented it a lot before doing the murders.
It's a possibility.
Or if in the double event, the first murder wasn't connected to the second one, so the connection didn't matter.
Absolutely.
Right. You can make anyone fit.
That's true.
So
this is fun. I understand. I get it now. This is
fun,
enjoyable.
Right?
Yeah,
so it all comes down to the validity of the diary. Because the person who discovered it later said it was false.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. But then later said it was true. And the reason he said it was false was because he was undergoing a divorce at the time and didn't want the media prying into his personal life.
Mm. And he also changed where he found it. So some reports say it was like a family heirloom that was passed down. Some say he found it under floorboards.
So
suspicious.
So the only thing that's actually tying him to this thing is under question. Right. It is under a lot of scrutiny.
There was also a watch, wasn't there?
There was also the pocket watch. So the pocket watch, I'm trying to think what the best example of this is. So there's a pocket watch where it's the initials of the, I believe it's all of the canonical victims, the initials are scrawled into the pocket watch.
Oh.
Yeah.
And
his name is at the bottom. And I believe it also says like it might even say Jack the Ripper on it as well. It's very, very explicitly.
But anybody can carve something in a pocket watch.
And it's such a
weird thing to do. It's
very specific.
Whether you're Jack the Ripper or not.
But they've also taken into account that the etchings weren't made recently. Mm-hmm. It definitely happened. And it was an old pocket watch. So the etchings could have happened around the time.
Sure.
And it could have implied him. And it further corroborates what's in the diary. Mm-hmm.
But then, like you said, though, I mean, we're talking about the first infamous, like, real celebrity. Possible people are making trinkets and just putting names on it.
Yeah, it's like the old holy relics.
Yes.
The thing I compare it to is, have you guys ever seen, I think it's Minority Report? There's a scene in that where they walk in on a room. They walk in on a room and it's like, oh, we have all the evidence we need. The guy looks and goes, you know what I would call this? He goes, what? It's like, it's an orgy of evidence. He goes, there's too much evidence.
It's like
there's so much evidence here. Like, people don't leave this much evidence behind.
Right, yeah.
The very fact he was like, I'm Jack the Ripper, Here's why I did it. By the way, I've inscribed every initial of every victim that's sure, it's associated too much. With him. You know, it's so much.
Right.
And the validity of these things have never been proven that it's like reasonable doubt.
Yeah. The watch just seems
very
like
Murder on the Orient Express right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can so, I just say, like, while I was like refreshing my mind of this this week,
right?
I got to the point where when Jack was away this week for a bit, I didn't go to the gym because I was too scared to go out my front door into the dark, into my car.
You got into your brain.
You know, just in case he was there.
Jack the Ripper was there.
You've been reading about me.
I see you're a fan.
our dogs, though, I swear, our dogs, like halfway through the night after I'd been researching this, like just started growling and barking, and they do this every now and again, like you know, Skrill cat in the outside.
But this time was one of the ghosts of Jack the Ripper.
Oh my
was,
god, I'd poop myself. I was like putting furniture in front of the, like I like locked everything.
Right.
There was furniture in front of everything. I've locked my bedroom door, put furniture in front of my bedroom door.
Do you,
my dogs are near me.
Do you own a Ouija board?
No,
that's not a good idea.
At one point, so this was like a few years ago, but I freaked myself out one night so much that I didn't sleep. I went down into our living room. I used to live on a farm and it was noises all the time, but I'd watch something particularly scary and I got a fire poker and like I slept with the fire poker across my chest in the living room, like on a leather sofa, so nothing could creep up on me and there was nothing underneath my bed.
Just in case.
Can you imagine the amount of times I have snuck up on this woman?
Don't do it. Boom. I'm a big scaredy cat.
And then you get elbow right in the mouth.
It's a swift hit on the arm. Wives, don't do that anymore.
Don't.
Oh my goodness. That's I get terrified about everything. But like it wasn't good recently.
have you been to Halloween Horror Nights yet at Universal?
Oh, you no, I will not be able to do that.
We're having to do that one.
We should go to that.
Yeah, that was the details. Goes to Halloween Horror Nights.
Love it.
All right.
Don't twist Dan's arm.
The very last person I'm going to present you, which is good fun in what is a series of gruesome murders.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Good. There's a chap, bit of a lad, bit of an algae mother.
Okay.
His name was Prince Albert Victor.
Yay.
Prince Albert.
Albert. You can't have a good Victorian story without the royals in there somewhere.
That makes sense. I'm down.
Prince Albert Victor.
But obviously not. Yeah, obviously not.
Not the famed Prince Albert.
Not the one in the can. Yeah. No.
Not the one with the piercing.
Right.
He was the grandson of Queen Victoria.
They all were.
They were. So he's the grandson of the reigning monarch.
Right.
And he's been linked to eventually going insane because of syphilis.
Because that's what happens when cousins marry.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. So, God, the gene pool side of the tadpole. So, he's linked to the Whitechapel murders in a very, very sort of... And this is kind of from hell...
Right.
The comic book kind of extrapolates from this one.
Okay.
The belief being that he either frequented Whitechapel and maybe even contracted his syphilis there.
Right.
Or that he had eventually fathered a child there.
Ooh.
And this had eventually gotten back to the monarchs. So that basically...
Shalom.
So basically the Jack the Ripper murders in this conspiracy theory is a... I believe it was almost roped in with the Masons, the Freemasons as well. That they murdered everyone who may know about the pregnancy.
We went Joseph Stalin with this.
So it was like, so you wouldn't have just murdered the woman,
right?
You would murder her associates, which are probably also prostitutes,
right?
And you just make sure that none of these people can then link back to the royal. So the claims are that it was either the prince himself may have done this,
right?
Being just insane,
right?
Or it may have been a royal physician.
Mm-hmm.
The royal physician at the time was suffering a stroke, so I'm going to say it probably wasn't him.
No.
But he's linked to it sometimes. But this is the royal conspiracy, the idea that the royals in some way were involved. Mm. Now, the fun part about this for me, if you're going to do the real, like, go down the rabbit hole kind of thing, is if you link up the five canonical victims in order, they make a pentagram.
A kind of
pentagram. They don't make a perfect pentagram, but they make a pentagram.
Yeah, okay. Right.
So this is where the Masonic sort of like conspiracy comes from, of they kill them in a very specific order, in a very specific way to create a symbol to scare people.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
That is why his legend has grown, because of some sort of dark magic. Happy Halloween, everybody.
But yeah, if you ever have like a few hours, just go down the rabbit hole of like everyone who done it.
This is so many. This is such a wide whodunit because of the lack of evidence, because of the lack of and the ridiculous amount of evidence that can't be proven to be evidence.
Because there was so much evidence, but they couldn't gather it. They didn't know to gather that evidence, so it just sat there and deteriorated.
Every third person is claiming they're Jack the Ripper as well.
Oh my goodness. This makes me want to rewatch a movie from hell. I didn't even like that movie, and now I want to rewatch it again. Yeah.
Read the comic book. The comic book's phenomenal. The comic book basically follows the outline of the conspiracy as its plot.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you that is really the thing that's kind of that From Hell does well, is it talks way more about what London was as a city at the time. Mm. Like From Hell, the comic is not a whodunit.
Right.
They show who did it within quite a few. It's like they go, it's going to be him. By the way, it's going to be him. Now we're going to show you why.
They're putting it all into context of the city, the time, the culture.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So. As opposed to the movie where it's like, hey, we got Johnny Depp.
Right.
He's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I like him.
Yeah, so, yeah, and the reason that nobody ever finds us is why we get such a huge hype 6 years later in the United States in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
When H.H. Holmes starts murdering.
Oh, the old H.H. Holmes
starts
stuff.
Thinking it's Jack the History the Channel's States.
Favorite Jack the Ripper associated.
Herman Webster Mudgett.
I have to admit, we quite deliberately went over the part where, like, oh, Jack the Ripper was American. Like, no. No, you can't have him.
We already have H.H. Holmes. We're good.
We have enough violence here. Thank you very much.
Yeah, the last thing we need is another genocidal maniac in our history.
I think we're good.
All right. We just elect them presidents in the early days. All right, ladies and gentlemen, this has been Devils in the Details. Thank you so much for listening. Please check us out in all the social medias and such. Twitter and Instagram at The Devils Deets. Check us out on Facebook at PFT Media Group. Rate and review us. We're on Apple Podcasts. Please rate as much as possible. Review.
Yes.
We're also on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher. Tune in. And if you want us to talk about a subject, hey, we will do that too. Just email us at devilsinthedetailsshow@gmail.com. We won't do it for the next month or so because we're going to get into World War II for the next month.
Yeah.
Since it's the 100th anniversary of the armistice.
And we've been crushing the 1900s and 1910s.
Yeah, we might as well just kill off the old empires in 2018 as it is.
Yeah, we're doing great.
So,
what do you guys want to plug? Twitter or anything like that?
You can find me, Clarice and Claire, on all major social media platforms.
Yes.
I'm Gentleman Jack G on Twitter and Mr. Gentleman Jack on Instagram.
Nice.
And then, of course, you can follow me at Dan P. Comedy on Twitter, DL Perella on Instagram, but the more interesting side is just follow FSCW Entertainment on Instagram or FSC Wrestling on Twitter. That's pretty much where my whole personality is anyway.
It's a great Instagram account that you run there, buddy. Yeah, I highly recommend people check it out.
So, and of course, all our other shows out there: Cinema Crespediso, What's the Fuss, The Major Scale, Scotch and Good Conversation, Simon Time Trivia, The Daily City, State of the Beer Union, Tidbits, Lady Raptastic. Jack, do you want a podcast? We're just adding them.
I'll start one called What's the Bother?
Yeah.
There we go.
All right, lads, what's the bother? Nothing? Right, same time next week.
I like it. Low drama. Very chill.
Minimal drama.
I'm down with it. You drink a beer and it's over.
This has been Devils in the Details for myself and, of course, our watchdog out in the sky, Pedro Lima.
We love you, Pedro.
Pedro.
Waiting on you, Beyonce.
Biatch.
A PFT Media production.